Okay, as I mentioned earlier, it's really a great honor and a privilege for us this evening to host Rabbi Elimelech Goldberg at the Boca Raton Synagogue. At any time, it would be a great honor, but particularly it's so timely given the prominence of his story, his work, his incredible achievements. We spoke on Shabbat Shuvah at length on the topic of Kiddush Hashem, and that being the mandate, our obligation each and every day, Nekadesh Hashemcha Ba'olam, to not go to sleep without asking, have I been someone's angel today? Have I positively impacted the world? And while many of us are still struggling to be able to answer that question in the affirmative, Rabbi Goldberg is not. And how do we know that? Because no less an authority than the Heliga CNN has declared him a hero. And for CNN to declare someone a hero is really no small feat. It is a remarkable achievement, and it's a heroism worth celebrating. After experiencing tragedy, after experiencing the unthinkable loss, to transform that into a positive, to be able to improve the world and repair the world, it's something that others lecture about, but only Rabbi Goldberg has exhibited it, and through that is an incredible inspiration, truly is a hero. So I want to encourage people to go on the website, CNN's website, to vote.
CNNheroes.com.
If you're here, if you're listening online, go, tell other people to go. Keepery, can you vote more than once? Keep changing your IP address?
Every day.
Go to the library, go wherever you have to go. Use a computer in the university. Every IP address, but vote, because it's already an incredible Kiddush Hashem. Please God, when he wins the CNN Hero of the Year, then the Kiddush Hashem will be even exponentially greater. So I want to thank him and his Rebbetzin for being with us, and the Yasher Koach on the incredible work that he does. Without any further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce Rabbi Elimelech Goldberg.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to follow Rabbi Goldberg. Tremendous hakara satov to the shul, to the Rav, to open this up so quickly. I didn't know before this past Thursday, when Anderson Cooper announced that I was one of the 10 finalists, that there was a vote. And even though I left the active rabbinate, my greatest joy in life is to hear myself speak. But I wasn't pushing it. But then all of a sudden, the mandate to push it became much more extraordinary. So thank you so much to Rav Goldberg for opening up the shul for this. Farley Weiss was the one who really got a tremendous amount of the word out through National Council of Young Israel, as well as connecting us here and getting this set up. So, and to all of you, thank you so much for being here. There's a Michigan story of about a guy who gets stopped by a state trooper. Trooper pulls him over and he says, "Sir, you were going 15 miles over the speed limit. Let me see your license." He said, "Officer, I don't have a license." "So you don't have a license?" He says, "Yeah, they took it away. I was driving under the influence." He said, "Okay, let me see your registration." He said, "Officer, it's in the glove compartment." He said, "Get it." "Officer, I have to tell you, I have a gun in there." He says, "You have a gun in there?" He says, "Yeah, I know how to tell you this, but I used it to shoot my wife. She's in the trunk." Officer calls her back up. Sergeant comes to the car and he says, "Sir, let me see your license." He says, "Sure, officer." He says, "You have a license?" "Of course I have a license." "Let me see your registration." He reaches for the glove compartment. He says, "Do you have a gun in there?" "Officer, I've never touched a weapon in my life." He says, "I don't get it. The other officer said that you have a license, you had a gun, you shot your wife." He says, "And I bet you that liar said I was speeding." You know, all of life is really how we frame it. And ultimately, it's all about the spin. I want to tell you about the spin of a young man named Bernard. Bernard, at 11 years old, was at a party that a group of people called the Optimists. There's these Optimist clubs, they're like Rotary clubs. I don't know if they have them down in Southern Florida, but they're all over the place. Surely there are pessimist clubs, those are optimists with experience. But there was an optimist club that was making a party for our kids from Kids Kicking Cancer. And towards the end of the party, this 11-year-old boy, Bernard, is being wheeled by his sister to the front, to the MC. He has to the microphone, and there must have been about 500 people in the room. In a loud voice, he says, "Hi, my name's Bernard," and everybody stopped and looked at this little boy in his wheelchair. And he says, I just want to thank you, Optimist. You made such a great party for us. And I want to thank Kids Kicking Cancer because you guys are a family. I just want to teach everyone here what they teach us at Kids Kicking Cancer. That no matter what you face in your life, you can breathe in the light and push out the darkness. And then he proceeds to do our breath break. We have a trademark breath break, B-R-A-K-E. Just in case, it is trademarked, so if we catch you breathing, you have to support the organization. And he demonstrates how, no matter what you're facing in your life, you can breathe in this light and push out the darkness. And this little boy ends with a beautiful smile on his face. And then they gave me the microphone. And I had a hard time speaking because everyone in our staff knew Bernard's story. This is a child whose mom abandoned him when he was just a little kid. His dad died when he's 8 years old. His uncle died when he's 9 years old. And that's the year that this boy was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor that was slowly stealing any movement from his body. And this child sitting in that wheelchair with the most beautiful smile is teaching them what we teach the children. No matter what you face in your life, you can bring in the light and blow out the darkness. So it took me a moment to compose myself. And I said, I want to share with you, Optimists, what you just heard from Bernard, because Bernard defined optimism. But the definition of optimism is not that everything is going to be great. Optimism means that you could respond to everything with greatness. That's what optimism is. And this really is the theme of thousands of children through the years that we've been zochet, that we've had the privilege of allowing them to breathe in the light and to blow out the darkness. So Rabbi mentioned this story begins. I had the privilege of being a Rebbe for Yeshiva University of Los Angeles. There was a time that while you actually had a college program out west, the Rav's nephew, Moshe Meiselman, hired me to teach in the college program, the Beis Medrash. And Friday mornings, we would dedicate to Parshat HaShavua. And that Shabbos morning, it was the Parsha of Akedas Yitzchak, 34 years ago. And I asked my students the question, what exactly is the challenge? I mean, you remember the story. God came to Avram and said, "Kachnas bincho. Do it. Take your son." He didn't leave anything to imagination. "Es bincho shichitcha es Yitzchak shahavta es Yitzchak." Nothing left to the imagination. What do you say to God? "Let's do lunch. My people call your people." Those were not phrases yet correct. Created, and certainly not appropriate to the master of the universe. So based on the Malbim and others, I posited to my students who were not much younger than myself at the time that if you look carefully at the text, Yitzhak doesn't know exactly what's going on, at least in the beginning. He thinks he's going to a holiday, a korban. Celebration. And the Torah emphasizes, "Vayechu shneim yachdav," they both walked as one. As Yitzhak was singing and dancing up that mountain, so was Avram. Then Yitzhak turns around to his dad and he says, wait a second. We've got the knife. We've got the fire. Right? Check. Everything's checked. I guess Eliola. Where's the animal for the sacrifice? Everything else available at Home Depot, Mesopotamia. But getting an animal to just, you know, volunteer, a little harder. And Avram answers, Eseliola b'ni, pointing to many, you're it. And the Torah repeats that phrase, Vayevu shvam yachdav, they both walked up the mountain, singing and dancing. I explain to my students, with the wisdom of age, we don't choose the script. But all of life is how we respond to that script. And sometimes you get called up to these mountains and you have to figure out the way to go up singing the dance. That was 9 o'clock in the morning. Ruthie called me a few hours later, and I could tell you how long ago it was. There was a time, young people don't get afraid of this, but this is true, that phones actually occupied desks and walls. I had to go to the office because my wife was calling. Unusual for her to call in the midst of the day. My daughter had been diagnosed with a virus, something bad going around, don't worry. And Ruthie says, there's something really wrong. We're going back to the doctor. I tried to argue with her. It's Shabbos. We're going back to the doctor. About an hour before Shabbos, we received that one phone call, and unfortunately no one is immune from that one phone call that could change your life. No one. And remember as if it were yesterday. The doctor says, look, we have to rule out leukemia. Those are the days where childhood leukemia was not a very treatable disease. It's a different world today, Baruch Hashem. Remember the ground in L.A., I've been through a few earthquakes, but nothing felt like that. We went back to the doctor, went back to the hospital. On Shabbos morning, we realized that leukemia was not ruled out. The technician comes into the room, he says, they want another x-ray of the spleen. Carrying my daughter downstairs, he turns around to me and he says, look, as we enter the x-ray room, a little short staffed today. Do you mind just fastening her arms and legs to the table? I looked at the clock, it's 10 o'clock, Shabbos morning, Los Angeles, everyone's reading Akedas Yitzchak. I knew Avram didn't use Velcro, but everything else felt the same. And I remembered what I told my students the day before. That somehow you have to find the strength to walk up that mountain singing and dancing. It's a lot easier to give a shiur. Baruch Hashem, our daughter, at the age of 2 years old, we transferred to UCLA to the bone marrow transplant unit. She would tell the doctors, no medication today, please, and tell the 5-year-old kids in the clinic not to cry. Very special, Nisham. Unfortunately, none of those kids survived bone marrow transplant. It's funny because about 2 years ago, I appeared as a hero, and it seems to be a kind of an appendage, you know. My resume, I have Sandik Mumcha and hero underneath, which requires leotards and matching cape. We appeared in a hero in People magazine. Baruch Hashem, you know, probably have never heard of that magazine. But appeared as a hero there, and I got a call, actually an email, subject line from a woman that said, you probably don't remember me. Turns out she was the nurse who was with us when our daughter was diagnosed. Then she transferred to UCLA, so she was the nurse for the bone marrow transplant, and she was with us when our daughter passed away. And she wrote, she said, for the last 32 years, I tell everyone about your daughter. She was very special. Gave us a tremendous chizuk. But she was an unusual little girl. About 7 years after she was niftaret, I found myself the rabbi of Yom Yisrael of Southfield, which is located in Michigan. For those of you in Florida, Michigan is very close to the United States. And I got a call. There was a guy who was starting a camp for kids with cancer, Rabbi Simcha Scholar, and he was raising money. I thought it was a great idea. I know what the kids go through. I know what the parents go through. I was excited. And I wanted to introduce him to people and write a check myself. I just thought it was a great idea. He comes to my office and he says, no, I want you to direct the camp. I said, you're an absolute lunatic. Every little girl will be our daughter. There's just no way we can do this. Simcha's a great salesman. It takes 5 minutes to make them laugh. They're just kids again. Ruthie and I did that for 12 years. It was a Kev Simcha that I came across a medical reality. I also have an appointment as a clinical assistant professor of pediatrics. I teach pain management and end-of-life care for children. I teach the doctors how to deal with the children. It was at camp I came across this reality. Walk into the infirmary, and there's a 5-year-old child being held down by two nurses. The third nurse has a large syringe to put into the port of his chest. Now, in the old days in medical school, we used to teach that there's a pain center in the brain. It's an old Descartesian model. With the advent of brain scans, we know it's not true. It's all neural matrix. And if you look into the posterior cingulate cortex of the brain, it's about over here, but you have to look very carefully. You can see that if a person is afraid, if they're angry, if there's no purpose to the pain goes up a lot. And so the psychogenesis of pain connects to what we call the nociception of pain. And this kid was screaming. He was afraid. I walk into the scene, I'm the camp director. And it was so bad and so counterintuitive to me, I just yelled, "Wait!" And they all stopped, even the kids stopped screaming. And they all look at me, and I have a clue what I was going to say next. I just said, "Could you give me 5 minutes with this child?" The nurses are happy to leave, and the little boy looked at me like I was the governor. I just stayed his execution. And I walked over to this child, and I said, "You know, I'm a black belt, which doesn't mean much. To a little kid, it's a wow." I said, "You want me to teach you some karate?" He almost jumped off the table. And I explained to him, the martial arts you learn, that pain is a message you don't have to listen to. You can bring in this amazing chi, this karate power, and it doesn't matter if you call it chi, ki, tanaga, dalam, prana, nishama. You can bring in this amazing power and push out the pain. Watch me. And 5 minutes later, we're doing a simple Tai Chi breathing technique. And 20 minutes later, they took the needle out. And he looked up at the nurse and he said, "Did you do it yet?" And that's when Kids Kicking Cancer was born. So we started a project, a trial at Children's Hospital of Michigan with 10 kids. And this past year we saw about 2,500 children in 4 countries. Because the children believe in the martial arts. So I train other people to walk around in their pajamas and teach every single child that they have this amazing power. So I'm going to show you one of my favorite videos because it features me heavily. This was done by Good Morning America a little bit ago, and just give you a little bit of the visual of it.
Yeah, everybody to meet some remarkable kids, strong, brave, spirited, all getting their health back through an innovative program that's teaching them to breathe in the light, blow out the dark, keep attacks at bay. ABC's Juju Chang has their inspiring story.
And one, two,
this little guy is 6-year-old Gabe Adler. The big guy, Richard Plowden, 5-time world champion martial artist. A face-off between student and master. But Rich is not just teaching Gabe how to fight. Here at Michigan's Beaumont Children's Hospital, he's teaching kids who are in the flight of their lives.
Gabe and Apollo, the martial arts and Apollo, the black belt. We teach them some kicks, some punches, but the main thing is martial arts therapy, meditation, breathing techniques to help them through their diagnosis. What are we?
These kids are either patients in the cancer ward or have a settling there. Together, they're using this ancient art in their epic battle to kick cancer. It's the brainchild of an unlikely action hero, a mild-mannered Orthodox rabbi, Elimelech Goldberg, or Rabbi G, who just happens to be a black belt himself. After losing his own daughter, Sarah, to leukemia, Rabbi G wanted to help others who were struggling through cancer treatments.
Explain to this little boy, martial arts, you learn that pain is a message you don't have to listen to. You can breathe in this amazing energy, this chi, and push out the pain. And 5 minutes later, this boy was doing a simple Tai Chi breathing technique. 20 minutes later, they pulled out the needle, and the boy looked up at the nurse and said, "Did you do it yet?" And that's when Kids Kicking Cancer was born.
1, 2, 3, 4! Luca Aversa was diagnosed with cancer at 4 months old. Today he's 7, and by using his martial arts training, he's gone from having to be held down for treatments to managing it all on his own.
It makes pain go away. He's informed several nurses on several occasions that he's a big boy and he's a martial artist, and he will do it all by himself.
Amber Madigan's mom, Michelle, says after a recent surgery, her 12-year-old daughter's mental toughness surprised even a seasoned recovery room nurse.
They noticed that she started to do the breathing on her own and started calming herself down. And she said she's been in there for 20 years and never saw anyone take that type of power in their own hands.
The martial arts teach these kids that even though their bodies might feel weak, their minds can still be strong.
Here's a process they believe in. Here's a time in their lives when they're anything but powerful. And we explain to them, you can be powerful, you are powerful, and you're teaching, you're very, very powerful.
It's a lesson Rabbi G hopes they'll use even after they triumph over their illness. And on this day, the students have become teachers, showing the standing room only crowd of adult cancer patients and their families the secrets to the 3 P's. Well, good morning, America. Juju Chang, ABC News.
What a difference this organization is making, helping more than 5,000 kids all over the world.
The power that we give to the children is really theirs. But it's a matter of reframing the disease as a possibility for them to become teachers. One of the greatest challenges that children have in facing any pediatric illness is the realization that they're different from their friends. They're no longer part of the group. We create a different group and we explain to them, you're very different from your friends. You're dealing with extraordinary adversity, and rather than being defeated by it, you're bringing in this light and pushing out this darkness. That's power, peace. And we ask the kids, what's your purpose? They all yell out, to teach the world. So we started bringing our kids to other kids. We did a study with the CDC with our kids in Brooklyn University Hospital, teaching a group of kids who are part of the obesity program. And we explained to those kids that everybody gets mugged, but look at these kids, how they respond. And we explained to them, and I thought it was pretty cool, an Orthodox rabbi teaching these inner city kids how to walk into a McDonald's and understand that voice in your heart that says, supersize me. You could breathe in the light and you could push out the darkness, and here are power choices. Not about fattening, that doesn't work for kids, unhealthy, definitely not relevant to children. Here are power choices. And by the way, if you guys can do this, imagine you can make those kids with cancer feel. So So for the first time, some of these kids had a purpose. We can help these kids. They told us in the CDC that if we kept the weight even, over 20 weeks it would be a win because they're getting taller. So the BMI is the body mass index is improving. The average weight loss for those girls in 20 weeks was 16 pounds because they became martial artists because they were helping these kids. So we decided, wait a second, that's a whole circle, and we called it the Hero Circle. Because even though I get all of this appellation, it's the kids are the real heroes. And when they know that, it changes their therapy. It changes their perception, changes their pain. And then we realize that we can teach children, we could teach adults, we'll just talk slower. And we started bringing our kids to companies, teaching them how to deal with stress, because everyone has stress. But ongoing chronic stress, the stuff, what if this, what if that, kills people. So we started giving stress seminars, teaching our breath break, bringing in our little kids in their gis. They get standing ovation. They go back therapeutically different because they know they are teaching the world. And 97% of the companies that we've taught, of the employees, describe it as having a profound impact on their lives. And this is Ford and Walmart and Sanofi Aventis and, you know, etc. So then we realized that the more the children teach, the less pain they have. And we began to study that. We were just written up in Blood, which is the American Society of Hematologists. I felt relatively vain being in Blood, but I apologize to that guy. But ultimately, the word began to get around. And I brought a group of kids 2.5 years ago from Sloan Kettering to teach Pfizer executives in New York how to breathe in the light and blow out the darkness and focus themselves. 3 days later, they called me from Italy. Would I come to Rome to teach Pfizer Rome how to do this? Went to Rome. Pfizer got so excited about the prospect of doing a program there that a few months later, Orthodox Rabbi is seeking permission from the Pope's office to teach an Eastern meditative technique to Vatican children, which the previous Pope granted. So we have a program at Baby Jesus Hospital, Bambino Gesù. And that spread through Italy. But I want to tell you about the title of the talk, because it appears on the wall of the Dearborn Islamic Center, which is the largest mosque in North America. A perfect God created an imperfect world perfectly. You hear it? Perfect God created an imperfect world perfectly. And then they wrote underneath, Rabbi Elimelech Goldberg, founder of Kids Kicking Cancer. I told them, don't put my address up there. But this is something that's so transportable. Because ultimately, we all have mountains. We all have paths in life, and nobody writes the scripts of their lives. You get a little older, and you look back, and all of a sudden you realize, well, you'd be a lunatic to write that script. All of life is how we respond to that script. And that's why during this time of Simcha, we call it Simchat Beit HaShoeva, the joy of pulling the water out. Now, you know that the real aspect of the water is a libation. It's poured down the tubes that the Gemara says on Daf Nun Beis in Sukkah, Tana Debei Rabbi Yishmael, these are the tubes that were there from creation. So it shouldn't be Simcha Beit HaShoeva, it should be the Simcha of the pouring. Shoeva is the drawing forth of the water. But if you look at the Mishnah and Sukkah, it determines that no, the real Simcha was pulling the water out. And that's been a mandate of our patriarchs, as the major theme in so much of Bereishis is all's well that ends well. It's digging below the ground to pull out water, then the Philistines fill them in, and then Yitzhak has to go and complain about it, and finally they leave him alone, and he has, it's about wells. The Talmud says this goes back to the original Mayim. There was water in creation, and God divided up between the upper water and the lower water. But that lower water, the Zohar says, and I'm an expert in Zohar, because when I was talking to Demi Moore about healing with the power of light, she did something for us, nice lady. She said, "Rabbi, that's very Kabbalistic." And I said, "Oh, hatir zirkele mit der Rebbe Madonna, oichet," you know. So I'm an expert in the Kabbalah. I learned with Demi and all of these people. But in the Kabbalistic context, the force underneath the ground is Gvuot. This force of dealing with travail and challenge. And digging forth, pulling away the dirt and realizing that ultimately this water is light. And you could pull that up no matter where you are. Because God never gives a challenge to a person without giving that inner strength, that light inside of themselves. And that's what it's all about. Life is a quick trip. I remember in the old days, in our young Israel, it was very close to what used to be called Prentice Manor. It was an old age home. And there was a gentleman there, Mr. Haidt, Oliver Shalom. He was 97 years old. He came from a great Polish dynasty, believe it or not, of Yaakov Gesundheit. That's the name. Nothing to sneeze at. And one day, and I used to love to speak there as a rabbi because they would lock the last wheelchair. Nobody could get out. It was like Gan Eden. He fell asleep pretty quickly, but it was like Gan Eden. And one day I'm pushing Mr. Haidt to lunch after my lecture. He says, "Rabbi, I'm ready to go." I thought he meant lunch. I wasn't talking lunch. But I don't understand. I was just a kid. What, you know, what happened? And I looked at him. I was 26 years old, 27. I didn't get it, you know. Man, you're 97 years old. What do you mean you were just a kid? And then when I turn 30 and then 40, and I understand at 50 I'll feel even more different. That's my wife, happily with me in the back. As you go through life, you realize it's a very quick trip. But it's all about finding that light that sometimes is buried inside of ourselves. That's the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, that's the pulling forth. And that's the power. Our program is not about, and we give black belts to kids at the end of their lives. And we embroider on one end of the black belt child's name, and the other end the words master teacher. And thank God most kids do pretty well today. But if you work with a lot of kids, you give out way too many black belts. You go on YouTube, you'll see a YouTube there called Clevis, K-L-E-V-I-S, put in Clevis and Kids Kicking Cancer. You'll see Clavitz getting his black belt. It's powerful, powerful video, because this is a child who we were told wasn't going to live out the week. He got so excited to get his black belt. We never tell him the black belt's the end of life, although many times the kids would go, "Psst, I know, but my mom doesn't know that I know, so don't tell her that I know." And we're in the middle of that dance. Clevis got so excited to get his black belt that he actually got out of the hospital. He wasn't supposed to live out the week. He lived for another 6 weeks. But he knew that he had been a teacher. And we have kids as young as 5 years old get up and say they've defeated their cancer. Because they're more connected to God and the people around them. And they're not angry and they're not afraid. That's a life of victory. A person could live to 120, proverbially. but the key is not arichat yomim, meaning lengthy years. It's arichat yomim, it's the lengthy days that we live. If every day has purpose, that's a long life. And that's the simcha of sitting in the sukkah and saying hevel avolim, like, what's it all about? And realizing that hevel, as the Ramban says, is vapor. There's so much that looks real, but you ever try to grab that steam escaping from the ghetto and you open up your hand, there's nothing there. But vapor is created from Eish and Mayim, from fire and water. And Rashi tells us the Medrash, so is Shamayim, Eish and Mayim. To realize that ultimately, everything is an opportunity for Shamayim. So I'm going to leave you with one story. And God willing, one day I will come back and teach you how to breathe. Because stress kills people. And if I told you how to respond to it now, I don't get invited back. But it would be my pleasure. We have a whole seminar just how to breathe. And it's not by accident that the word for breath, nishima, is the same as nisham, your soul. And the ability to use that breath to stop the stress chemicals, you can actually turn the adrenal gland off from shooting out glucocorticoids using your breath, shooting out the stress chemicals. Clearly indicated. I always tell people, studies prove that if you're going to breathe for 120 years, you're going to live a long time. But since you're breathing anyway, using your breath to relax your muscles and reverse the stress chemicals is really easy. And God willing, if invited back, bli neder, be happy to come back and teach you how to do that. But then you got to bring your friends. So let me tell you a little bit about, before I tell you this last story, about the CNN thing. You've heard of CNN. When we were filming at the Children's Hospital of Michigan, one of my board members, who's the chair of pediatric hematology there, he says, "Psst, I don't like CNN. They do a terrible job in Israel." So I said, "Jeff, do you want to go out and tell them that?" He says, No. We got a call about 5 weeks ago. We were nominated CNN Heroes. I've never heard of it. I don't have a TV, so I can't even tell you what it looks like, this program. But I spoke to a number of people and said, "It's a big deal. It's a two-hour special. And, you know, it gets millions of viewers. It's a great thing." So gave them permission to vet us, and they called board members and families. And thank God we have a very transparent organization. So it was a pretty simple process. They spent an hour on the phone with me, which for them is never a simple process, having to spend so much time talking to me. But they seemed to enjoy it. And thank God we got the 24th nomination. Found out later that they had already had 24 nominations in and approved, and the person who nominated me a little bit late. But one of the 24 didn't vet properly and all of a sudden fell through, and so God wedged me in there somehow. This lady came to us with her whole film crew to shoot for 2 days. And I had a very busy day. And I was fasting. It was my mother's yahrzeit, her second yahrzeit. The vote goes to November 16th. You could vote every day to November 16th inclusive. That's our daughter's yahrzeit. So during this process, we're showing them classes and we're showing them hospital work. And the second voice, the voice of a child, was this young lady, Haley. Haley's raised by her grandparents. She doesn't have parents. 2 years ago, her grandmother contracted breast cancer. Then the grandfather was diagnosed with a tumor in his jaw. And a few months later, Haley's diagnosed with a rhabdomyosarcoma sarcoma behind her eye. Not a great year for that family. Haley got into our program very, very soon after her diagnosis. And not before long, Haley's teaching her grandparents how to breathe in the light and blow out the darkness. Haley needs an MRI every 3 months, in which her head has to go into a cage and be restrained, and then the whole thing goes into this gigantic noisy machine, the MRI. Haley is sedated because she's 10 years old. And it's a big machine, and she can't watch anything because they're viewing her, scanning her eyes. And she hates the sedation. She wakes up sick. She's groggy. She can't do school that day. She hates the sedation. So Haley and I created a meditation called Haley's Meditation. And CNN shows a little clip of it. I think they're going to do more of it as we go forward, because now they're, this whole week, they're dedicating to the 10 heroes. Please do not vote for the other 9, whatever you do. I'm sure they're all great people working hard to find dirt on all... No, that's right. So, just joking. Not funny. So, Haley is listening to me for an hour and 20 minutes go through this meditation. It's the longest meditation I've ever yelled into a speaker system in my life. That poor girl had to listen to me for an hour and 20 minutes. We're going on like 40, you can only imagine. She came out and they had contrast, so, you know, they get very cold when the contrast... Totally calm. Totally focused the whole time. She came out, they were throwing confetti and the noise clappers. You see, again, a little tiny part if you go on to cnheroes.com and you go on to the article, that's the first video they made of us. But one of the things I was doing that day that didn't show up yet, but I hope does for the sake of this young child, where we don't have programs yet, I Skype with kids, and our staff Skype with kids. I'm Skyping with a 10-year-old boy from South Africa. This is a child who 2 years ago is a sweet Jewish child, one of a twin, who was diagnosed with an ependymoma with a type of brain tumor 2 years ago. And a few months ago, he relapsed. And the doctors in South Africa tell him there's nothing we could do. Just palliative care, let's keep him comfortable. Parents contacted us. I have a friend, John Finley, who's a neuro-oncologist, pediatric neuro-oncologist. He was then at UCLA, great guy. He looks at the studies, he says, I want to see the scan. He says, I'm sorry, he wants to see the slides. Send them the slides. Gives it to his pathologist, they have a whole conference, and he says, this child was misdiagnosed. He doesn't have an appendix. He has a neuroblastoma. We can treat him. This child is now in New York being treated by another friend of mine at the Memorial Sloan Kettering, Ira Dunkel, also a guru in neuro-oncology. But this little boy, Daniel, is having his very intense upper GI pain because of the chemo. Very rough chemo. And he's getting rougher stuff now. So I'm Skyping with Daniel. And in 10 minutes, his pain lowers 4 points, and all of a sudden, the child's smiling again. And they're capturing this on video, and I explain to them, please show this, because this boy needs to know he has a purpose. He's a teacher. So afterwards, as the producer is going, we became buddies. I said, am I allowed to know who nominated me? So she said, sure. She opens up her folder. She says, the woman in Irvine, California, we're starting a program there, God willing, Amanda Leibowitz. But you don't know her so well, and we like that, because most people, they get like 50,000 nominations. Most people are nominated by their brother-in-law. So we like that she doesn't, but she was introduced to you by another woman whose name, I don't know her name, but she's closer to you. So I'll tell you her name. It's Zoe Rock. She's the aunt of that boy in South Africa I was just Skyping with. The aunt of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A perfect God created an imperfect world, absolutely perfect. And so I actually wrote a manuscript. It's called The Perfect God Created an Imperfect World Perfectly, 30 Life Lessons from Kids Kicking Cancer. And I have a QR code at after each chapter that you can hear a meditation associated with each chapter. And it's sitting by a very big literary agent. Mamish Hashkach, I got a very big literary agent. When you write a book, you need a literary agent. This guy represents Bill Cosby, Nancy Pelosi. And it's sitting there for 3 months at an echad garnished. I don't hear anything. I figure if Bill Cosby and Nancy Pelosi can get books, Rabbi G, you know, come on. Like, you know, this should really move. I don't get it. Like, what's going on here? The producer of CNN is sitting with me. And she says, did you write a book? I perked up, yeah. She said, where is it? I said, it's by William Morris Endeavor, you know, good agency, the senior vice president there, the senior literary agent. He's got my book, and I hope to hear from a publisher any day. Like, you know, I thought that was a good thing. She said, let it sit. If they hear in CNN that you have a publisher, they'll drop you. I said, what? She said, they'll be afraid. They're really funny about this. They're afraid that you're using CNN as a platform to sell your book. You have to wait till December 8th to get it out. So I called up Mel Berger, my literary agent. Everyone should have one. You can tell people my agent. And I said, Mel, I want a book. I want the book to come out December 8th. Don't give it to anybody else. He said, it takes a long time to get a book out. It's early fall is there. I said, you know what? I'll publish it myself. Because this is a world platform. And that's the name of the book. A Perfect God Created an Imperfect World Perfectly. 30 Life Lessons from Kids Kicking Cancer. And so I'm very interested. Because in that book, I talk about theodicy. Why do bad things happen to good people? And I have the wisdom of being able to say, I don't know, but let me tell you what I've learned from the children. And when you read about the stories of these children, the Bernards of the world, coming forward and smiling at an audience and saying, no matter what you're going through in your life, you can bring in the light and blow out the darkness. And you realize that ultimately, the hand of God touches people and allows us to reach inside, Ushafta Mayim Bisasam, to dig underneath the ground and produce lines. So the reason that I'm here tonight, number one, even though I left the active rabbinate, my greatest joy in life is to hear myself speak. So that's number one. But number two, we're looking for networks, high schools, those are the kids who are, to get on CNNheroes.com and tell their friends and their camps and their friends' friends. I don't tell people I'm Jewish. But somehow the Rabbi G thing comes through in the video. But ultimately, to serve as a light for the nations, that we have an opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem. And believe me, it's not about me. I'm the tall, good-looking guy in the front. It's really about Ein Od Mevado. That the Shvaruch Hu gives us these mountains. And ultimately provides us with the strength to climb up those mountains, singing and dancing. I'll end with one story. It's at the end of the book. I told you the beginning, I told you the end. You're not going to want to buy the book now, but that's okay. One of the first kids that I taught martial arts therapy to was a boy named Boris. Boris Niyazov came from the former Soviet Union. And he had not one, but two bone marrow transplants for Ewing sarcoma that kept nastily pressing against his lungs. We brought him to Camp Simcha. And all of a sudden, the kid started smiling, and he had his own counselor, and Boris and I became very friendly, and he still had a lot of pain. And he loved the martial arts, and he loved the breathing, and he did great. But for the first time, he had Yiddishkeit. Somehow the former Soviet Union forgot to teach him a little bit about Torah. And Boris and I We really hit it off. We came very, very close. And after the summer, Boris would call me up and he says, Rabbi G, how does a Jew do this? How does a Jew do that? How does a Jew do this? One day Boris calls me and he says, Rabbi G, how does a Jew prepare to die? What do you tell a 17-year-old child how to prepare to die? I said, Boris, we don't prepare to die. We prepare to live. But you have to understand, every day is life. And when you wake up in the morning and you give your sister a kiss and you hug your mom and you smile at your friends and you can say, Shema Yisrael, that day is alive. And when you could do it despite your pain, as you breathe in the light and blow out the darkness, you'll influence thousands and thousands of people. Boris, every day is life. That's what I told him. In the meantime, I was able to get his scans. He was at a hospital that wasn't so great, to a friend of mine, sarcoma specialist at Sloan Kettering. Some of you might even know him, Lenny Wexler. He could attest to the story. It's a wild story. They had a protocol for Boris, and his tumor started to shrink. And one day, Boris calls me up a few months later, and he says, Rabbi G, I just want to say God bless you. I said, Boris, God bless you. This child has been through Gehenna, though, excuse me. He stopped for maybe 40 seconds. He says, you know what? I think he has already. If this child felt gebench, he felt blessed. I couldn't talk. I remember telling him, Boris, I'll call you later. And I just hung up, totally humbled by a then 18-year-old. A few months later, the tumors came back with a vengeance. And even the great docs at Sloan Kettering had nothing for Boris. And I went into Queens, New York, several times to visit him. And then he kept slipping more. At the end, he fell into a coma. I called his sister and I said, Inesia, do me a favor. Put the phone to Boris's ear. She said, Rabbi G, it's too late. He's been in a coma almost for 3 days. He's totally non-responsive. The doctor was just here. I said, do me a favor. Put the phone to Boris's ear. And I could hear very, very slow breathing. I said in the phone, I said, Boris, remember we said that every day is life? Right now it's every second. But don't be afraid. I want you to look for a light. I want you to look for a light which is a reflection of God's love for you and the power of your soul. Look for this light. Then his sister took the phone away. And Boris died very soon afterwards. I wasn't able to come in for the funeral, but for the Shloshim, I came in to talk to our staff. We all need chizuk. And the first stop I made in New York was with my assistant at Boris's home. I had spoken to Boris's mom during the shiva, but she was in shock. Now is an opportunity to talk to her. Before we can sit down, Boris's mom says to me, Rabbi Goldberg, you have to tell me, what did you say to Boris at the end? I said, Mrs. Niyazov, why do you ask? She said, it was the most amazing thing. You see, our son had been in a very deep coma. He wasn't responding to anything. After his sister took the phone away from Boris's ear, Boris opened up his eyes and then he sat up. And we were amazed. And we tried to get his attention, but it was like we weren't in the room. It looked like Boris was looking for something. And then his face lit up. as if he found what he was looking for. And then he closed his eyes and he laid down. And that was the end. What did you say to Boris at the end? My dear friends, this is not about dying. Everyone will figure that part of their lives out one day or other. Don't worry. That's not the challenge. The challenge is living and understanding that every single day is life. And that the script of our lives was written by an author who gave us the capability to climb up these mountains with greatness, with optimism. Thousands of children are doing that today. And knowing that no matter what you face in your life, you can breathe in the light and blow out the darkness. So my dear friends, yes, I definitely want you to vote and get schools and friends and neighbors, whomever, so we can get this message out. The vision is to reach a platform of a world. Because the world needs to know that a perfect God created an imperfect world perfectly. And we as the Jewish people have a mission to provide that world with His light. We call it power, peace, purpose. Thank you all very, very much. If anyone has any questions, again, it's CNNheroes.com. Clearly, again, it's not about me, but it's a great opportunity, and hopefully to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim and the schools, and let's get that message out there. Because hopefully it's good for the Jews. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Rabbi Steele is the director of the local Maimonides Society, and Rabbi Goldberg and I have known each other since we were 11 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I have been a supporter since the beginning. We're sort of connected to Southfield, my wife, since the beginning, I know he hasn't made the pitch, but I will. I have been a very proud supporter of Kids Kicking Cancer. Just go to kidskickingcancer.com.
.org,
and please support, because it is a great organization.
Thank you
very
much.
Very proud to be a supporter of it.
Thank you so much. Thank you all, and thank you, Farley, for making this happen. And God willing, this is a message we will get out and get the votes. Yes, it's Hashem. Thank you so much.
Did your breathing technique go wrong?
Put some pieces, not like the old thing.